Welcome to the September podcast. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Unfortunately, suicide is an issue that is not unfamiliar in rural America. In the United States, suicide rates among folks living in rural areas are 64 to 68% higher than those in large urban areas. On this podcast, our CEO, Chandler Gould, shares his personal story and explores ways we can combat the stigma surrounding mental health in rural America. I also spoke with Farm Credit Council CEO Todd Van Hoos to get an update on the state of the farm credit system, its impact on farmers, and how this underscores the need to pass a meaningful farm bill this year. But first, I had a chance to catch up with U.S. Custom Harvesters Treasurer Michael Neumiller to find out how wheat harvest went this year. Michael Neumiller is the current treasurer at U.S. Custom Harvesters. Michael is from Bowdoin, North Dakota, and runs a grain harvesting business with his family. The Neumillers began their business, Neumiller Harvesting, in 2004 when they traveled to Texas to assist with wheat harvest and have continued to grow the business ever since. Every year, Neumiller Harvesting starts in Vernon, Texas in May and travels up through the Midwest to North Dakota harvesting wheat, then start in on fall crops and stay up north. How are you today, Michael? Welcome to the NOG podcast.
I'm doing great. Thanks for the opportunity.
So can you please explain to our listeners who may not know what U.S. Custom Harvesters does and your role at the organization?
So I sit on the board of directors. I think there's seven of us, I believe, total. We're kind of a link between farmers and harvesters. Sometimes farmers would call into the office to where Mandy is and say, hey, I've got a few thousand acres here, or 700 acres there, or whatever. And she'd send a link out to, or an email out to all of us harvesters. They also help find employees for harvesters, for grain harvesters, for cotton harvesters, for choppers. We also do a lot of stuff in Washington in the wintertime, help with policies and regulations there. We got a lawyer in Washington that helps us out with that kind of stuff to stay up to date, I guess. So that's the main thing, I guess, is just kind of a link between farmers and harvesters, employees, and also policy and regulation.
So as I mentioned before, your business harvests wheat in several states in the middle of the country. Can you give an overview of how wheat harvest has gone this year?
So good question. Everyone thought wheat harvest was going to be very early, earlier than normal in North Texas this year, including myself. We got down there. It was still wasn't quite ready, which is okay. But then it started raining. And it's been like that for like the last probably 3 years in a row now. You get down to North Texas and they haven't seen rain in forever. And all of a sudden the combine show up and it starts raining and raining and raining and everyone in the campgrounds are going crazy. But we start in Vernon, Texas. I think it was finally, I'm going to say, May 23rd, 5th, which is probably really a normal start date before we really got going. And it was a decent crop, maybe average, I guess. There's a lot of ranching down there, so there's a lot of people that graze their wheat, and the cattle market was pretty good, and the wheat market was down. So people graze their wheat, I think, harder than normal. So we did see a little less bushels there. There was different parts of Texas that had really good crops, but just where we were in particular was probably average to maybe just a tad below average. You go up into Oklahoma, kind of the same deal there. We were probably a little below average in southern Oklahoma, kind of south, a little bit more to the eastern side of Oklahoma. Some of our machines were. Then we traveled into southern Kansas, same thing there. They've been in a drought for, 3 years. We go to the Pratt County area in Pratt, Kansas, and 3 years in a row now they've had just a bad, bad crop. And we've been combining there since 2004, and that place is usually hits a home run every year. I mean, they have just a good crop, good ground, good farmers there, and they just nothing you can do about it with Mother Nature does. So they were well below average, but still way better than we were last year. We hardly cut any acres there in 2003. So we were still able to cut everything this year, just was not a very good crop. You get out to western Kansas then, now out western Kansas where we cut, we had great crops. It was probably above average. It was good cutting. Elevator lines were long. Trucks were sitting in line, combines sitting in the field. That's when you know you have a good crop, you're waiting on trucks. But you go just west of us, and like 30 miles. I know a friend of mine was cutting over there and their crop wasn't as good. So just small pockets that had good rain, good moisture throughout the winter makes a big difference. We go Eastern Colorado after that. Eastern Colorado had a real good crop too. Places that didn't get hail had a good crop, but we also lost some of our work because of hail. And when did they have hail? In May, I believe May sometime, a big hailstorm came through and was kind of spotty and took out several farmers' complete crops. So from there we go to Billings, Montana. Continuous crop was not very good there, probably below average, but any summer fallow crop up in the Billings, Montana area was really good. Probably a little above average, I would say, maybe on their summer fallow. Then if you want to focus back into North Dakota, North Dakota's had pretty good crop throughout. The southwestern corner of the state, I would say they were pretty decent. Probably a little above average. And you get into the middle part of the state where I'm from, starting to be a little disease, little falling numbers on their wheat. Some elevators are really cracking down on them. Now we're up in the very northern part of North Dakota, up along the Canadian border. Wheat's been tremendous, but any wheat that's left now is laying flat on the ground, and lots of rain. And I don't know how we're even going to get it up out of the field, what's a little bit that's left before we start soybeans here in a week or two.
Well, thanks for giving us that update. That's really positive to know that some areas in the country had some great crops this season and we're seeing improvements.
So, as you mentioned before, U.S. Custom Harvesters, you guys help out with, policy initiatives with several of, groups around the country. Can you tell us what is U.S. Custom Harvesters currently focused on with policy issues?
So the first thing is our K exemption, and that's where we can have under 21-year-olds drive across state lines with our harvesting equipment. So if you can be 18, 19, 20, and still cross state lines, pulling a combine or pulling grain trailers to go from job to job, having a CDL, but not under the regulation of being 21 like everybody else. So it's called the K exemption. We still have it for another year. It's very tracked very closely. We have to report any accidents back to our office for anyone in the 18 to 20-year-old range that gets in an accident, and that has to be tracked back to FMCSA. And so they're kind of watching it to make sure we're not, getting into trouble or getting into too many accidents as young kids driving. But there's just some wording that can be changed there, and that's kind of what we're going to be doing to try to get it into the law. Right now, we're under this little window where we have this exemption, I guess, for the time being, for another year, I believe. But I think there's some wording we can help get changed there and get that to effect all the time. And it's a very gray area for DOT officers across the United States not knowing this exemption. So sometimes it's frustrating, but it's something that they don't see very often unless harvesters are coming through. Always keeping up with H2A regulations, wage rate, a heat rule that just came out for OSHA. And another big thing we'd like to see happen is a farm bill get passed for all farmers in the US, obviously, but we're also trying to get something in there. It's a very, very uphill battle as far as custom harvesters. We don't have any insurance. Say a farmer in Kansas has his crop zeroed out because of hail or drought, and me as a harvester would come into that area and we have nothing to combine. There's zero protection for us, zero. And it's a struggle, it hurts. And we're just trying to look to get something into a farm bill that if we have a job lined up and we cut zero of that job, we could get a little kickback from the farm bill somehow. We're not looking for any help. If we can come in there and cut a 10 bushel crop or a 15 bushel crop, that's fine. We can probably cover our expenses, hopefully, at that. But if there's a zero crop, that's what we're looking to get a little help there. And like I said, it's going to be an uphill battle. We're going to need to have a lot of help from other organizations. Well, I think the wheat growers, the corn growers, the soybean growers. I mean, if we're ever going to get this in there, we're going to need a lot of help from a lot of our friends. So,
Todd, it's great to have you back on the Nod podcast. Earlier this year, you came on the podcast to explain the Farm Credit System and the mental health partnerships that Farm Credit Council is a part of. As we get closer to the end of the year, we wanted to have you back on to update us on the state of the farm credit system, its impact on farmers, and how this underscores the need to get a meaningful farm bill passed this year. Welcome. How are you today?
Thanks. Good. I appreciate it. Coming off a big week where we had all the farm groups in town last week making their case to pass a farm bill, I think we made some progress next week. So hopefully when Congress gets back after this election, we can see some light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, I think we definitely made some positive progress at that fly-in. So in August, USDA came out with their net cash farm income projection 2024, which projected that U.S. farm income will be 27% lower than it was in 2022. NOG, Farm Credit, and as you mentioned, other grower organizations recently came to D.C. to highlight these and other financial pressures on Capitol Hill as a part of a multi-commodity effort to get a strong farm bill passed. How has this affected the credit landscape, and what have you been hearing from your folks on the ground?
Well, we've been hearing a lot, as you might expect, and we've been asking a lot of questions out in the countryside. You know, first thing you mentioned there was the USDA projection, and I got to tell you, I don't quibble with it. It's probably very, very accurate, but I think it's also misleading, because the situation that we see is worse, and most of that net income decrease, I think everybody understands that. My question was, why didn't it fall further? Especially when they revise their estimate. And the big thing is cattle. And so the cattle market has been so strong that that's almost offsetting a good bit of the other sort of generalized agricultural income drop. And so for crop producers, for you know those non-cattle folks out there, this is a really significant downturn. And we're seeing that really across the board. We've talked to all the farm credit institutions across the country, from Florida to California to Washington to Arizona to Maine, and there's problems everywhere. You know, in California, you're looking at multiple years for people who have permanent plantings out there, multiple years of negative profitability. Same thing for some rice producers. Same thing for some folks in the Southeast, various crops. Cotton, you know, has been devastated. And so We are seeing a lot of that going on in the country. And I was reminded that as much as we've been, much as us in agriculture have been aware of this for, you know, a number of months, the recent disasters in the country have made it worse. And I think Congress is only kind of now waking up to just how bad it is. And I think that fly-in last week really helped push that across, because I've had members of the staff talk about, wow, it must have been serious. Look at all these diverse groups in here talking about the same thing. So I think we made good progress last week, as I said, but we're very worried about next year.
You know, as the overall financial situation of the U.S. farm economy continues to deteriorate, you know, this obviously makes it harder for our producers to run successful operations. As you know, tough financial times weigh heavily on farmers' mental health. A recent study said around 80% of producers say that the state of the farm economy impacts their mental health. What is Farm Credit doing to help our farmers get through these tough times?
Well, you know, a couple of things that I would talk about. Number one, for anybody that's having some financial difficulty, right, the earlier you go in, sit down with your loan officer and have a conversation, have a realistic conversation about what's possible, what your plans are, what your needs are, the better off everybody's going to be, the more time we have to try to work through things. Because, you know, the farm credit system exists to serve farmers in good times and bad. And our folks are talking about doing everything they can to make sure we try to see as many people through this as possible. Things like loans restructurings, deferments, you know, all kinds of financial tools, FSA guarantees, all kinds of financial tools that might be available. So again, if you're listening to this out there and you're having some financial difficulty, I would urge you, get in there and talk to your loan officer as early as you can, because the earlier you can have those conversations, the more options there are. And so that's number one. And then number two, you hit it right on the head. Is this, we've seen this before, as financial stress rises, what is an already stressful industry becomes even more so. And so this does impact farmers' mental health, and even beyond that to farm families and into rural communities. We see that across the board. And so we've taken a number of steps. The first thing we did was start to train our own people. How do you recognize the symptoms of stress? How do you recognize when somebody's really having a problem out there and might need some help? And how do we get them resources? And so we put a training course together for Farm Credit System loan officers a couple of years ago now, that's been pretty pervasive and I think been helpful over there. For customers, we are part of the Farm Family Wellness Alliance, which is a number of groups in agriculture sort of raising the profile of a number of programs. One of them is Together All. Together All is sort of a peer-to-peer, online, clinically moderated network where farmers can go on, talk to other farmers about the stress they're feeling, what their situations are, and hopefully have a positive discussion. And I said, those are clinically moderated. So somebody is watching that from a mental health standpoint and can provide expert help when necessary, refer expert resources, that sort of thing, if that becomes necessary. And then the other thing we're doing is, along with Together All, we have something called Personal Assistance Services, PAS. And that's free, very importantly, but it provides access to experts on estate planning, financial situations, depression, any mental health issues that might come up. And it's a way to get somebody in touch with professional resources they need, and it's free. So all of that can be found on our website. If you go to farmcredit.com and look under the resources section, you'll find links to Together All, to PAS, and more information about how to access those services.
Well, thank you for outlining these great programs. I definitely will make sure that NOG shares these resources far and wide. Besides the initiatives that you just explained to us, what are Farm Credit's main priorities right now?
Well, number one, pass a strengthened farm bill. I mean, that you know, if somebody said, what are you working on? That's really it. I mean, yeah, we want to get the government funded this week. That looks like that's going to happen. There's talk of potentially some kind of a supplemental disaster bill. Okay, we'll talk about that as well. But number one, by a long margin, is producers need a strengthened farm bill, and they need it now. And they need a five-year farm bill, not a one-year farm. Because as you think about how are you going to weather this storm in agriculture, you can't say, oh, all I can do is plan for next year. You've got to be able to look forward 4 or 5 years and understand what the framework of this thing is going to be. And so, look, we appreciate the extension that's in place now, and we understand how hard it is to produce a final farm bill, but we got to have a farm bill. And we've got to have a stronger farm bill to meet the needs of producers today.
Is there anything else that Farm Credit is working on that we all should be keeping track of?
You know, it's interesting. Farm Credit has a lot of initiatives underway all the time. One of the biggest ones is young and beginning producers, because as much as the downturn in this economy has really hurt all farmers, it's hitting younger producers even harder, because a lot of people are getting through these negative profit margin timings by relying on the equity they've built up in their enterprise, right? I mean, if you've been in this for 20 years, you've probably got pretty good equity. You've seen your land values grow up. All that's wonderful. But for younger producers who are getting hit before they had the chance to grow that equity and build that nest egg, if you will, we're very worried that those are going to be the hardest hit by this downturn. And so all of our programs for young and beginning producers, we're seeing a lot of demand for that, whether it's educational materials, training courses, discounted loan programs, altered credit underwriting standards. A lot of that Farm Credit does across the country. And those programs have been very popular and successful. So we're keeping an eye, especially on those younger producers right now.
Chandler, it's great to have you back on the podcast during Suicide Prevention Month. I know that this is an issue that is close to your heart. Welcome back. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me on the podcast this month.
So for several years now, I know you've been a big advocate for increasing awareness and resources around mental health and substance abuse in rural America. What inspired you to begin speaking out about these issues?
So, like many families in rural America, though people may not realize this, I lost my older brother April 16th of 2012 to suicide. And of course, the devastation that brought to my family and the sudden death that you know we had to deal with really brought to my attention that, you know, this is not just an urban issue, but that basically almost one in four suffer from this out in rural America. And I know there's going to be a blog post that's coming out later this week that I wrote, but, you know, really the first thing that went through our mind was, you know, this kind of thing doesn't happen to a family like ours, you know, and looking back at my family, you know, my parents came to all of our events, you know, we had a good family life. I'm sure there was stress there, but it wasn't anything out of the ordinary, you know, looking back as an adult. And, you know, after the fact that we had to lose two family members to suicide before our family would actually start to open up somewhat and talk about the fact that anxiety and depression and substance abuse was very prevalent in our family. And it just absolutely was not talked about growing up. And actually, to kind of even compound that story, I actually lost my dad when I was 15. He got sick on Sunday and died on a Wednesday, the first day of school my sophomore year, though he didn't die from suicide. You know, he basically drank himself to death. He was a functioning alcoholic. And again, I go back to, you know, never missed anything with us kids and we had a good family life, but he drank every day. And my brother drank every day. And my grandmother drank every day. And so, you know, and to be honest, I've had problems with drinking before and have done outpatient rehab for drinking and substance abuse. And so just being aware of it and then continuing to work with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. We're also working very closely with Rural Minds, who we'll talk about a little bit more later in the podcast. But I picked up the advocacy portion of this for one thing, because suicide is preventable. If we can get over this stigma and people feel comfortable, you don't have to go put up a bulletin board or a billboard, but just tell one person in your family or a friend or a doctor or a pastor or somebody that you're struggling with depression or anxiety or substance abuse issues, so that somebody knows, because usually the signs are there, but we've spent so many decades not talking about this issue. Many people overlook the signs when they're right there in their face. And I'll be honest too, doing the advocacy work and speaking out has helped me deal with the grief of losing my brother. Of if I can reach out and tell our family's story and just help one person, then I feel like I've done something in his name and in his honor. So it's two parts. One, I want to help others. And two, it really helps me to get this information out there.
Well, thank you for sharing your story. And I know we will be sharing your blog posts on our social media and our website later on this month. So, you know, everyone, please, you know, follow Nog to read that blog post. You know, as you mentioned, unfortunately, tragic stories like yours aren't uncommon for families in rural America. I think the most recent stat was in the United States, suicide rates among folks in rural areas are 64 to 68% higher than those in urban areas. You know, in our jobs, we hear from wheat growers every day about how difficult it is to run a successful growing operation. Can you explain to folks who might not know what challenges farmers face that impact their mental health?
Well, you know, one of the reasons, you know, that we have a farm bill, it's important that we have a risk management tool out there to help farmers and ranchers, you know, to weather their businesses. You know, Elizabeth, you and I go to work every day and we get a paycheck and we're salaried. And, you know, if it rains or there's a snowstorm or we have a severe drought, you and I still get paid to go to work. But if you're a farmer, you're held captive by the biggest unknown out there, and that is the weather. And the second biggest unknown out there is what the market is going to be doing. And so when you've got those two factors basically working against you sometimes that you have no control over, and you only get paid once a year when you harvest your crop, you know, in one night, you could have your entire business for that year or your entire income for that year be wiped out by the weather. Or even if you were able to bring your crop to harvest, maybe the market has been saturated and it's not returning enough money to cover the cost of production. And that's why you'll see that You know, 82% of farmers and ranchers and people in rural America say that weather is the factor that contributes to their mental wellness issues the most. 80% right behind them say that, you know, the farming economy, farm income is right there. So when you've got weather, which you have no control over, and income, which you can also have no control over certain portions of that, as the two leading factors, that brings a lot of mental stress and anxiety and even depression to farmers. And so that's why it's so important that we reach out and let them know that, you know, there are tools to help you with these financial situations. There are things actually in the Farm Bill, crop insurance, and the way we do credit lending to help ease some of that and bring some certainty to it. But overall, it's just the uncontrolled variables in farming and ranching that make it so stressful. And I don't think that the average consumer, or maybe even some of their friends there in rural America who aren't in production agriculture, realize just how difficult that job really is on the whole family, not just the primary person in the operation.
Well, thank you for outlining that. Honestly, before this job, I really didn't know how stressful the farming profession can be. You know, as you mentioned before, you grew up in a rural community. In your opinion, what are the major factors holding rural America back from receiving the mental health care that they need?
You know, I'm going to go back to stigma, 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 stigma. There's still a social concern out there when people reach out and ask for help. And I don't know. I think the only way to get to move that needle is to continue to put stories out like this, to say, you know, I may be a CEO now, but and a senior vice president. I've been all these titles like that, but you know, I still needed help. I've been in therapy three different times in my life for different things. I definitely went to therapy after my brother died. I should have gone to therapy after my dad died, but I did about 10 years later. But you know, and I don't have any problem sitting here telling you about it because I know I have benefited from it. Just being able to stand here or sit here on this podcast and talk to you about those two losses and not just break down over it shows that that therapy did work for me. And we need to get people more comfortable with A, the person needing to ask for the help, but the people around them supporting them for making that ask, because that is the hardest question. The hardest question is not actually finding a therapist and things like that. It is that first just admitting to someone else that you need some help. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But you know, three and four rural adults say it's important to reduce the stigma. I think the only way we do that is through large public campaigns, individual campaigns, whether it's through your Lions Club, 4-H, FFA, your church. But talking about this stress is out there. It's not just affecting farmers and ranchers, and that it is okay to put your hand up and say, you know, I'm struggling a little bit right now and I could use some help. And that's really all it takes to get that path going.
What would you say to folks who are still on the fence about reaching out for help?
Just say something to one person. You know, whether it's your partner, even one of your children, you know, a sibling, a friend. Say something to one person. And I know that it's very hard. I can tell you, I'm a person from that generation that has experienced the depression, the anxiety, and substance abuse. And I can personally tell you that you will get through this. And there are people there that are willing to listen and help. Just say something to one person because it could save your life or the life of someone else.
Well, I think that was well said, Chandler. I think the first step to tackling mental health and substance abuse issues is, you know, to have these open and honest conversations like we're having. I just really hope these words can help somebody that's struggling. Lastly, can you please let our listeners know of any resources they can use to take control of their mental health?
Absolutely. If you or a friend or a loved one is in need, kind of like we have the 911 hotline for emergencies, we now have a suicide and risk lifeline that is manned 24/7. It is free for you to call, and it is 988. I want to repeat that again. It is 988. You can text it or call it. For help 24/7. Please share that number throughout your family and your community. You can also go to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention website at www.afsp.org, or you can also go to Rural Minds, who Nog and myself have been partnering with for the last year. They are bringing amazing awareness to provide mental health and substance abuse resources to rural America. And you can find them on social media at Rural Minds, one word, or online at ruralminds.org. So again, it's 988 or the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention or Rural Minds on social media or ruralminds.org. Please use any of these resources to reach out or share with loved ones. And I hope that we can continue this message to break down the stigma that it is okay to ask for help.
Thanks for listening to the September podcast. Make sure to keep up with us on social media and our website at wheatworld.org.